Blog Talk Radio.
AVS Media Demo. AVS Media Demo. Carol received her training
as a clinical nurse specialist from Columbia University of Nursing, School of Nursing in New York City in 1997. She was nationally certified as a sexual assault nurse in 2003 and became New York State certified safe examiner in 2005. Ms. Carroll has made numerous presentations throughout the state on topics of sexual assault, forensic examination programs, and her personal experience as a survivor of marital rape. Ms. Carroll appeared on CNN and Inside Edition in July of 2003, commemorating on the media treatment of women, of the women of Choose, Kobe Bryant, and this might affect future disclosures from other victims. Ms. Carroll has also appeared as an expert in forensic nursing on the Katherine Cryer Show on Court TV in August, as well as in September of 2003 and in March 2004. She has also done press conferences with Senator Hillary Clinton, Senator Charles Schumer, New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, New York State Governor George Pataki, New York State Senator Nicholas Spano, Jeff Klein, and Andrea Stewart Cousins on topics ranging from statute of limitations on rape to emergency contraception and forensic exam on suspects. In 2005 of April, a chapter authored by Mrs. Carroll appeared in a book entitled Voices of Change. In March of 2006, Ms. Carroll appeared with three other rape survivors in a People's Magazine article about the Voices and the Faces project. She is featured on three websites, which is www.raisinghervoice.com and www.voicesofcourage.com, as well as voicesandfaces.org. Ms. Carroll has two sons, and she is a grandmother of four. Okay, so I'm just, again, excited to have and honored to have Carol on, Mrs. Carroll on the line. Karen, can you hear me?
I can, Pat. Hi. It's great to be on the line with you also.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. So, you know, you have such a very impressive background on a subject that is just so dark, but you're now bringing it to light, which is domestic violence. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, and then we can get right into, you know, your passion?
Sure. I was born in Washington, D.C., and my family relocated to the city of Yonkers, New York, in 1962, I believe. And I went to school in the city of Yonkers, and I graduated from the Cochrane School of Nursing in 1975, and I'm proud to say that I was the only woman of color in my class that year in the nursing school, and only the second woman of color to attend the nursing school in its history. So that was quite a momentous event for me. I should also mention that my history is a little interesting, because in 1972, at the age of 16, I gave birth to my son, my first child. And I was a junior in high school, but I did stay in school and did go on to graduate on time and did go on to nursing school. So that's a part of my story that I think I'm kind of proud of, and I guess I should be.
Mm-hmm. You should be, absolutely, absolutely. Tell us, if you don't mind, would you mind telling us how you got into becoming pretty much the spokesperson on sexual abuse and domestic violence?
Sure. Most of my career as a registered nurse was spent working in the emergency department, both as a staff nurse and then subsequently as the nurse manager. And interestingly enough, I was always drawn to women who came in there who were victims of interpersonal violence, were in abusive relationships, or who had problems. I was just sort of drawn to them. And little did I know that in 1994, I would become one of those statistics. I was tied, gagged, and raped at knife point in the bedroom of my own home by my then husband, not the father of my children, my second husband. He had been removed from my home 3 weeks earlier because he pulled a knife on me while we were having an argument. And now, of course, as a professional nurse, I've counseled many women about, you know, when you're in a relationship with a person that you're in love with is threatening you or mistreating you, or if your life is in danger, you need to really seriously think about getting out of that situation because violence tends to escalate. So I knew that the first time he pulled the knife on me was going to be the last time. I was able to get away that night. The next day, I went to family court, got an order of protection. The police removed him from my home. And then 3 weeks later, he was angry. And 3 weeks later, he broke into my home while I was sleeping. And, of course, that morning, that's when the rape occurred. And people often ask me, well, why do I talk about this subject? Well, as you know, Pat, domestic violence, interpersonal violence, as I like to call it these days, is a subject that although most communities know that it exists, they don't really talk about. And it's been my experience. That especially in communities of color, we just don't talk about this. And so I thought that since I was comfortable talking about it, then I need to talk about it because I wanted women to understand that no one, and I mean absolutely no one, has the right to hurt you physically, emotionally, or mentally, that you deserve to be treated better than that. And that if you're in a situation like this, you don't have to go through this alone. There is help available.
Where can, you know, my listening audience are all over the world because obviously this is the World Wide Web. But in general, where does one go? I know that people are now saying you have more children who are victims of domestic violence, which is shocking. You have parents who are, you know, living in the home,
yep.
and they're domestic, they're victims. Where do people generally go to seek help or support?
Well, in just about every community, there usually is some type of an organization. There are rape crisis programs, victim services agencies, domestic violence shelters, but there are programs where sometimes you just pick up the phone and you make an anonymous phone call to a hotline just to talk to someone. There are women that are specially trained to talk to you about planning for your safety, to talk to you about your relationships, because some of us are in abusive relationships and we don't even realize that they're abusive, or we may not know that relationships don't have to be this way. And what we do know historically is that when women who are in abusive relationships, when they make that decision to leave, that, unfortunately, can increase their risk for danger. And so by speaking to people who are specially trained, they can help you develop a plan so that you can leave the situation, if that's what you choose to do, in the safest manner possible. Or if you choose to remain in the relationship, they can give you tips on how to be safer in that relationship. And it's real important for women and men, because men, believe it or not, also can be abused by a loved one or a partner. But it's important for anyone who feels at risk in their relationship to know that they're not alone, that there are hotlines that they can call.
What are some of the signs that people should look into when, you know, because you said sometimes, you know, some people may not even realize they're in a domestic abusive relationship. What are some of the signs that they should be aware of?
You know, initially, the signs are kind of subtle, and can go unnoticed. For example, if we're talking about adolescents or teenagers, it could start with young people thinking that they're a boyfriend and girlfriend. And, for example, there's a young lady and a young man is interested in her. She's flattered by this. He tells her she's pretty. He lavishes attention on her. Then after a while, the attention moves on to more of a possessiveness where he wants to occupy all of her time. He begins to separate her from other friends. He isolates her even from her family. She no longer can, for example, go out with the girls. All her free time must be spent with him. He begins to tell her how to dress, what to wear, what not to wear. He may even buy her an amazing iPhone or a cell phone, you know, state of the art, so that she's real proud to own it. But this is his way of exerting more control. He will call her often, and she better answer when he calls. He'll check that phone to see if she has any other numbers in it. Then eventually the conversation sort of becomes types of emotional abuse. He begins to comment, for example, on her weight or her appearance, or you're not going out with that outfit, or, you know, you can't hang out with these people. Sometimes the discussions move toward argument. Then there may be a slight push or a shove, and then it evolves into a slap, and then the next thing you know, it's a punch. So these things are subtle in the beginning, but they almost always escalate into something more serious.
Wow. You know, it's amazing, and hats off to Lifestyle on TV. But they show a lot of these shows where they show victims of domestic abuse and at different age levels. And I remember seeing a program where just what you're saying, that was exactly the steps in which this young teenager was going through. She was a high school student, and those were exactly the same steps that she went through. If you recognize the signs, I have two questions. If you recognize the signs, what do you do? If you are a friend of a person and you recognize the signs, what do you do as a friend, a person observing?
Well, if you're in the relationship and you recognize the signs, and let me preface this by saying that when we're in the middle of it, we don't always see it. Others around us may see these signs first. But if you do, you need to talk to someone. If you're a teenager and you're in school, if there's a teacher you trust, or a counselor you trust, or the school nurse, there's someone that you trust you can talk to. Because sometimes you just need an opinion from the outside to make you really see the relationship for what it is. Now, if you happen to be the friend of someone that's in a relationship, that's a much harder job, because friends want to be helpful, and sometimes advice that we might give can come off as being judgmental. So the most important thing you can be, in my mind, as a friend, is a listener, maybe even a good shoulder to cry on if that person needs that, and be available with information and resources. But you also have to be non-judgmental, because if you begin to judge that friend or belittle that friend for remaining in that abusive relationship, if that's what she chooses to do, then the next time she's not going to come to you for help. And then what has that done? That has succeeded to just isolate her further. So the hardest thing to do sometimes is to watch people that we care about in these relationships. But if I'm your friend and if I'm telling you that I care about you and I want to be there to help you in whatever way you need me to help you at that time, then you're more likely to come to me again. I think the general population can't quite understand why women, girls, and even men stay in relationships that others may see as unhealthy. And, I mean, you could bring on tons of experts to go and to explain the reasons why people stay. But I think as a friend, we have to be there with information so that if she ever comes to us, we can give her a phone number, call these people, they will help you. But also just not judge her if she decides to remain. Because most women remain in abusive relationships for months and even years before they're ready to leave, if they leave at all.
Wow, that's very good advice. I'm sure for those who are listening and know of someone that they truly love, I'm sure that's very hard advice to take. What about, you know, I personally suspected a neighbor who is a victim of adult abuse. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's a daughter who I think is abusing the mother.
Okay.
What do you do in a situation like that? Do you call an agency, you know, anonymously? What do you do?
You can always call anonymously if you don't feel comfortable giving your name. In Westchester County, for example, we have Adult Protective Services, and this is an agency that specializes in the needs that are so special to the older population, the older community, and we do recognize that a lot of our older citizens are victims of emotional, verbal, psychological abuse, sometimes physical abuse, but much more often they're victims of financial abuse from loved ones or family members. And, you know, as a neighbor, you may be witnessing something that you don't think is quite right. You can call Adult Protective Services. Most of us use the Internet. You can go online, Google it. That information will come up, and you can talk to someone, and they can give you some ideas about what to do or how to intercede. That being said, if you actually witness or hear physical abuse going on, then you can call 911. And you can say, you know, there's something going on in the apartment next door. I believe that someone is hurting someone next door. You can call the police, and they will come and try to save, you know. You can do that even anonymously, but I think being a good neighbor is helping someone out in that kind of a situation, because that person may not be able to, for any number of reasons, make that phone call. But you can call anonymously and just talk and find out what's the best way to proceed to handle that situation.
Now, what would a parent of the abuser, if a parent sees these traits or suspect these traits of abuse in their sons or daughters, what should they do? They know that they're abusing their girlfriend or their boyfriends or whatever.
Yeah. You know, I have an answer, and it may sound oversimplified, but communication is so key. If you have a son, and you're noticing as the mom the way he's talking to his girlfriend, you're seeing signs, early signs, that he is verbally abusive to her or emotionally abusive to her, and maybe even, although I hope not, physically abusive to her, you know, you need, I think, as the mom, you owe it to your son to talk to him about it and say to him, listen, these are some of the things I'm seeing. This is what it looks like. I don't like what I see. And talk to them about relationships. You know, unfortunately, he may only be displaying behavior that he himself has witnessed, either from the men in his life or maybe the man in his mother's life, you know, because some of us are in relationships that aren't healthy for ourselves and don't realize that this can color the relationship that our children have. So communication is so important. They need to be able to have someone they can talk to. And if you're talking about instances of young men, they also need a positive role model that's a male. And they might be able to hear stuff from another man that they can't hear from mom. So, you know, if you have the opportunity to, there's an uncle or a teacher or a coach maybe that your son looks up to, or if you happen to belong to an organization that also has men who are members, they might be able to help out. If your kid doctor is a man, he might be able to help out. You know, so you have to look around you, because there's a wealth of resources in our own communities that we don't always utilize. If you are a religious person and you go to church or services in some sort of a house of worship on Sundays or Saturdays or whatever the day of the week, there may be a man or men in that organization that can help out. So, I mean, because we do know that a lot of moms are single moms, and they're raising sons and daughters alone. And while as moms we care about our sons and we can do our best to teach them to be good citizens, but, you know, only a man can teach a boy how to become a man. So we have to utilize whatever resources that we have available.
Wow. That's really simply amazing. Do you think that in some cases that the child cannot help themselves or maybe beyond help? And if that's the case, do you have to go for outside counseling or outside help?
Well, I think that in a lot of cases, outside counseling or outside help are indicated. And that doesn't necessarily mean that the child is beyond help. That just may mean that the child needs services that are above and beyond the expertise of the parent or that other community that I mentioned, and that there are professionals that know how to recognize certain behaviors. And there are modalities that can be used that can impact and hopefully change behaviors. Because personally, Pat, in my own experience, and maybe this is my own belief, I don't really think that anyone is beyond help. I'd like to believe that with the right set of circumstances and the right type of treatment, that everyone can benefit. And there are people who have done some horrible things. But, I don't know, maybe it's just me and I just need to believe that with the right kind of situation that even they can be helped.
For those individuals who are, like, on the fence, they don't know if they should go and speak to someone, from your mouth, can you say, and from your experience, that they will be okay once they see help?
I, as I alluded to earlier, 1994 was probably the worst year of my life. But what I think helped me was is that I talked about what happened to me immediately. And it is a lot of times easier to talk to someone who is not immediately related to you or not even personally related to you. So these hotlines that you can call anonymously, there's a national hotline, for example, for rape, abuse, and incest survivors. It's called RAINN, R-A-I-N-N, and it's 1-800-656, and then the letters HOPE, H-O-P-E. So whatever your problem is, you could, for example, call that type of a hotline, and if they cannot help you directly, they will steer you to someone who can. And people are not always necessarily ready to talk to someone they know or even talk to someone who knows them. So by calling anonymously, you can discuss whatever your issues are and get the resources that you need, and no one need ever know that you made that phone call. But what we do know is that when you don't talk about this with someone, the problems do not go away. They sometimes get buried, and then they sometimes come out later in life. So if you can at least make that anonymous phone call, pick that phone up, that's the first step. You will feel so much better after you make that phone call. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's going to make all your problems go away, but at least you're not going through it by yourself.
I guess abuse really does not happen like overnight. A person being abusive, I guess really doesn't really happen. Excuse me, overnight. And again, getting back to the signs, I remember when I was working at Rockland Children's Psychiatric Hospital, and you would hear stories about a child before they would end up where they, you know, at the Rockland Children's Psychiatric, where the child had incidents where they would abuse animals prior to, becoming abusive to others. What has been your experience with that?
Well, I do know that there's been research done, and that in certain types of behaviors that are exhibited by children can sort of be warning signs or red flags as to them possibly moving on to other types of abusive behaviors in the future. Classic would be cruelty to animals. Setting fires is another very classic sign. So when you see behaviors in your young children that you don't quite understand or are not quite sure how to handle, most parents at least take the children to a pediatrician, at least, or to some sort of a clinic for health care. So they would have information and referral sources for you, numbers you could call or people that you could talk to But you want to impact these behaviors as early as possible, because the sooner you get this child into some sort of counseling or treatment, I think the more likelihood of success. And I don't guess it's ever too early to ask for help if you're not sure, but I do recognize that picking up that phone and making that first phone call is hard. But, you know, sometimes you just have to just take a deep breath and figure out, you know, I love my child and I need to do something that's going to help them. And if it's causing you enough concern, then it's time to speak to someone about it. And, you know, I'd rather err on the side of making that phone call and finding out that the behaviors that I'm seeing are not as bad as maybe I thought they were, than ignoring those behaviors and then begin to escalate into something more serious. I personally believe that when a child is setting fires, playing with matches, or harming or being cruel to animals, that to me is concern enough that you need to speak to someone.
Thank you for that. Karen, how did you... before we go into that, I watch a lot of CSEI. I'm one of those victims. I love CSEI. And I noticed one of the things on CSEI is when the victim, after being raped, I guess they feel... I guess the natural impulse is to shower and to scrub off the experience. Is that something that if a person was raped, is that what they should do?
Well, I'm kind of glad you mentioned the TV show CSI. Those of us that work in the field of forensics, and that's the type of nursing that I do, know that a lot of what we see on TV is not accurate. But I think the best thing that has come out of shows like CSI is they're making people begin to think. So I want to say to those of you out there in the world that do watch a show like CSI, just think now. When a crime has been committed on CSI, the first thing they do is secure the crime scene. And the reason they do that is that they want the investigators to see it exactly as it was immediately after the crime has occurred. So in the case of a rape or a sexual assault, the victim's body is the crime scene. So we can think of securing that crime scene, just mentally picture in your head, wrapping yourself up in that yellow police tape that says, police line, do not cross. That means you're not going to take a shower. You're not going to change your clothes. You're not going to use the bathroom. You're not going to drink water. You're not going to brush your teeth. You're not going to chew gum. You're not even going to smoke a cigarette, because you don't want to alter that crime scene in any way, so that when you come to the hospital and you're treated by someone who's of my profession, the forensic nurse, part of our role is to begin to process the crime scene. So if I can see you immediately as you were after that assault, I can find out from you as best as you can tell me exactly what happened, then I know, based on my training, that there are certain places on your body where there might possibly be evidence, so then I will do certain things to attempt to retrieve that. And once I can process the crime scene, being your body, then I will do my best as the nurse to begin to help you start to heal. So I'll help you make decisions that will work for you. I will help you get cleaned up if that's what you want to do. I'll even give you brand new fresh clothes to wear home. So we'll do what we can to help you after this horrible event. But I want people to think out there, just remember, preserve that crime scene. And I think those that watch CSI and Law and Order Special Victims and Forensic Files, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
That's very good, and I hope that people really, I mean, I hope that no one has that situation happen to them, but in the event that it does, I hope that they are listening and will remember that you have to preserve the incident. You have to preserve the crime, as you say.
Well, Pat, there I want to also say something else, because there are a lot of people who have been raped or sexually assaulted, and preserving the crime scene is not uppermost in their mind, because they have decided that maybe they don't want to report this. They don't want to deal with law enforcement. They're not sure. What I want all people to do after a rape or sexual assault, in addition to think about preserving the crime scene, I want them to also think about taking care of themselves. So by getting first to a safe place, That's the first option. And then you want to get to a hospital or a healthcare facility. Because even if you never choose to speak to the police, even if you never choose to report this as a crime, there are some medical things that we can help you with. For example, you can be given medicine that can prevent you from getting a sexually transmitted infection. You can be given medicine within a certain time frame that could help prevent you from getting pregnant if you're a female as a result of what happened. And if we see you within hours, 36 to 72 hours, we can give you medicine that could possibly prevent you from getting the HIV virus as a result. So these kinds of treatments are time sensitive. So we want you to get to that medical facility as soon as you safely can so that we can begin to initiate some protocols or treatments that could help prevent long-range problems further on down the line, even if you never decide to report what happened to you to the police.
Very, very good, very good advice, and I hope that people will listen and try to get help, because you, like you said before, you never know what health issues may be affiliated with the rape.
Yeah. Well, you know, the sexual violence is so pervasive in our world. And we look back, and when you look at, for example, the homeless population, I mean, there's research that says even as high as 90% of people who are currently homeless have some history of either interpersonal or sexual violence in the past, either perpetrated on them or they were witnesses to it. It's the same for people that are in drug and alcohol rehabilitation programs. People self-medicate after going through personal trauma. I mean, so this problem is so pervasive, and it's affecting every one of us. All of us know someone who's been through some sort of an interpersonal violent episode, whether they've talked about it or not, but they have. It's in our families. It's the people we work with. It's in our schools. It's the people that are sitting in the pew next to us in church. It's the lady that's behind the checkout in the local grocery store that you go to all the time. We all know people.
What happens? Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Karen. What happens when, you know, we live in a day and age where, God knows, things are very, very difficult. Jobs are extremely hard to come by. And now you have a boss who is being sexually abusive to the employee. How does a person like that seek help? What happens?
That is such a tough question. There are laws against sexual abuse and sexual harassment in the workplace. That being said, you know, there are people that work in small businesses, so there may not be a human resources department, for example, or an employee assistance program, or somewhere where they can go and talk to someone when they feel like they're being mistreated by the boss. Because it may be just them and the boss in this business. There are places in larger organizations to go. The one thing that this person is being abused needs to remember is no one has the right to touch your body or to abuse you. That is against the law in every state in this wonderful country, and it's against most laws in most countries in the world. That being said, it is always not as easy and cut and dry as just picking up the phone and calling for help, you know, because I do recognize that if you're a woman and you have family to feed and you're the only one bringing in money and you can't afford to lose this job, you know, it's tough and it's difficult. So sometimes victims of these situations have to weigh enduring this abuse versus feeding their families. And while that should never be, that lady can pick up that phone and call that hotline anonymously and talk to someone, and they can strategize about how she can seek help. Because sometimes we think that job is the only job that we have and we can't let it go because we need to feed our kids. But maybe picking up that phone and making that phone call, they can give you alternatives so that your kids can still be well fed and that you can take care of yourself. Because eventually the trauma of working under those circumstances is going to affect you and then ultimately affect your children. And so I just want people to understand they don't have to go through these situations alone. There are people out there that can help, but they can't help you if they don't know what's going on. So sometimes the hardest thing you have to do is the most important thing to do is pick up that phone and call and just talk to someone. And sometimes things that seem hopeless are not quite so hopeless when you can share it with somebody else.
Wow. Tell us about your experience with Avon and how that happened, you know, you being one of the spokespeople featured in their campaign.
Well, that was an amazing experience. A very special friend of mine, her name is Carla. I won't use her last name, but her name is Carla. And she happens to run a program in upper part of Westchester County that is a resource and it helps women that are in domestic violence and interpersonal violence situations. And we've been friends for years, and she called me one day, and she said that Avon was thinking to do a public service announcement training video for their employees. Because as we know, Avon Corporation employs mostly women. They empower women. And while we know that there are some amazing women that work for Avon that have run successful businesses, they too, even as successful as they are in interpersonal relationships which are not healthy. They are being, some of them, beaten or physically or emotionally abused in their homes. So Avon thought that if they could reach out to their employees, and if their employees understood that no one has the right to beat you and that if you speak out against domestic violence, that we can end it. They thought that if the employees get this, then the employees will transmit that to their clients. Because sometimes it's a lot easier to talk to the lady that's selling you nail polish than it is to talk to someone in your family. So I commend Avon for thinking of this campaign. And so they asked those of us who are in the field and who are outspoken if we'd be willing to participate. And they took us down to a studio down in the lower part of New York City. And we filmed that thing in a couple of days. And it's truly amazing. And I use the actual video that you talk about in a lot of training that I do. And I love it because there are men and women and children of all ages in it, of all ethnicities. And so I think everyone that looks at that will see someone that looks at themselves. The various professions are represented. And we spoke out, and we survived, and we're doing well. And so and it ends, I think, on a note of hope. And so I truly enjoyed being involved in that project for Avon.
Well, I tell you, it is an amazing, I don't want to say commercial, but it's an amazing public service message that when you watch it, it really makes you stand and just kind of forget about what's going on around you at that moment and to listen and actually to hear the message that is coming across in the public service announcement. And I know that, you know, that must be something, again, that you should be very proud to be a part of.
Yes, and I do, like I said, commend Avon for doing this. And while I said before that interpersonal and sexual violence is so pervasive in our communities and in our world, but if we can each reach out and help each other one by one, and one person helps another, who helps another, who helps another, that's how we're going to end this. We have to sort of take care of ourselves. And Avon, being an organization that employs mostly women and whose clients are mostly women, what better way to reach out? I mean, I think we should train every hairdresser, every person that works in a nail salon, every person that works in a spa, because I'm telling you, when you're sitting there and you're getting your nails done or your pedicure or your hair done, that's when you're most comfortable and you a lot of times feel safe and you'll talk and confide. So imagine if every beautician knew to tell people, call this number, do this, do that, then how many people could we reach? Thousands, maybe even millions that we never reached before.
Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing, the possibilities. Let's talk a little bit about men, because, you know, we keep saying women, and every so often we will say, you know, men. a man that's being abused? Should he just be ashamed? And do you find that men who are abused are less likely to seek help?
You know, in this country, I think we put such an awful burden on our young men, and we give so many mixed messages. Now, we know that maybe 16 to 20% of women never come forth and tell anyone that they've been sexually abused, for example. I don't even know what the statistics are for men, but I know it is so underreported because in our society, we believe that men should be strong and that they have to be masculine and that they can take care of, and we don't like to see anyone as a victim, even much less of a man as a victim. So it is hard for anyone to come forward and say, I was raped or I was assaulted or I'm in a violent personal relationship. Now, you multiply that by 100-fold, and you're a man. And you, for all outward appearances, look like a man. You're masculine. Maybe you have muscles. Maybe you're big. Maybe you're strong. Maybe you're professional. Maybe you're a dad or an older brother or an uncle. And how do you go into, for example, a police station and say, I've been a victim of domestic violence, or I've been a victim of sexual violence? You know, how do you do that? I mean, imagine the courage that it takes. And then if the first person that you disclose to is not compassionate, is not understanding, and it is not judgmental, then maybe you can offer the services. But if that first person that you tell looks at you a certain way or treats you a certain way or judges you just by either how you look or what you've just said, that's going to shut you off from ever reaching out again.
Mm.
And that happens so often. And then you have to take into not only account the fact that you're a man, but then look at the different cultures. And being a man means different things in different cultures. And so if you weren't born in this country, that could affect whether or not you're ever going to seek services, especially law enforcement, because some people come from countries where the law enforcement are the biggest perpetrators. So then now we're telling them, come here and go to the police and they'll help you. And that goes against everything that they've ever learned or experienced. So there are just so many barriers that victims of violence face, and especially male victims of violence. And I can only, you know, Pat, speak to this from the outside looking in because obviously I am not a man. But I just want to commend the courage it takes for any man to come forward, because being a woman and talking about it is hard enough. But I can't really imagine what it would be like being a man and having to talk about that.
I can't either. God bless them. Oh boy! So what? Well, I can't tell how fast the time goes by. Are there other agencies, help agencies that you want to point out for my listeners to be aware of?
Well, what I want listeners to think about in communities where you live or where you work, most of them have some sort of an agency that provides services to victims. So you can, most of us are in the age of the internet, so I'll use that for an example. You can go online and you can Google, if you just put in the word, sometimes even rape or assault or domestic violence, there'll be a myriad of agencies. And most of them are so interconnected that if you call one and if they're not in your immediate neighborhood, they will refer you to somewhere, someone, or someplace that is. But like I said before, it's just making that first phone call. Sometimes you can call 311. Some communities have a 311, which is a help type of a helpline that, because I don't necessarily want people to be dialing 911 unless they're in immediate physical danger. 311 will help. Sometimes it may be simple. You may live in a community small enough that just picking up the phone and calling the operator may help. But any victim services agency, if they can't help you with your immediate problem, they can get you to someone that will.
And they should not feel ashamed.
No, because there's so many of us out there. I do a lot of public speaking, as you mentioned before. I've been fortunate enough to travel in some places around the world, but a lot of places in this country and a lot of places in New York State. And I have never, and I mean never, ever spoken to a group of people where I haven't had several people come up to me when it was all over and say to me, that happened to me and I never told anyone. There are so many of us out there that are connected with a history of violence somewhere in our lives, interpersonal violence in our lives, that, you know, we're ashamed. But, you know, the first time you tell someone, you're going to realize there are so many people like you out there that there really is no reason to be ashamed because, you know, unfortunately, there's probably a lot more of us out there that have some history of it in our family than there are those that don't.
Wow. That's really amazing.
Well, you know, I think maybe we should try to end or at least move towards something positive.
Okay.
I do want to say that when we speak about men, we have begun to see in the last 5, 10 to 15 years that there are amazing men and male groups around the country that are beginning to talk about prevention. They're beginning to travel to colleges and address fraternities and sports teams. They're going into communities and talking to young boys who are playing Little League or Pop Warner football. They're talking to young kids in school about dating relationships. And they're talking about interpersonal violence because I think that the more we talk about this, the more we get it out in the open, the more we, quote, unquote, air our dirty laundry, the easier it will be to clean that laundry. We've got to take away the shame, and the only way to do that is to talk. And there are some amazing things that are going on in our communities. And so I think, you know, there's hope. I do believe that one day there will be a world without violence. I don't know, Pat, if that's going to be in my lifetime, but I would like to believe that when my granddaughter is a grown woman, that the world will be a better place for her than it is for her right now. So, I do want to think that there is hope out there, and there are people that are dedicated to providing services or sometimes just providing an ear, just listening and saying, you know what, you're still a good person and it's okay. And I understand what you've been through, but I'm here for you. So there are some good things going on.
Well, thank you so much for, being that and sharing that information with my listeners, and and as always, like you said, it's always hope. You know, we can always pray for a change, and I like yourself believe and hope that change will come.
Yes. I definitely believe that.
And change has to start with each and every one of us.
Yeah, and you know, and it can start in home, and it can start in our communities, and we have to have these conversations. And I came up with something that I believed years ago, and I guess I'll just share this with the community, because bad things do happen to people. And you know, like I shared with you, I had a very bad year in 1994, and for years I was like, why me, why me, why me? And then one day suddenly, and it was about like 2005, I think, it was like I just had like what Oprah calls an aha moment. And it came to me that 1994 happened to me not because of something I did, but because of everything that I will do. And so Robin Roberts on Good Morning America always said, you know, there are messes in this world, but it's so rewarding when you can turn a mess into a message. So I want to say that to people listening out there, that we all go through bad things and bad things do happen to us. But each one of us has to sort of look inside ourselves and kind of figure out what we can do to begin to heal and to be move from victim to survivor and then to what we even call a thriver, and how we can turn that bad thing that happened to us into something positive. And that looks different for every person. But I do believe that there is hope and that things can be better and they will get better. I can't tell you when, but if you work at it, you can sort of speed that up a little bit.
Very good. Okay, well, very good, Karen. And I hope maybe, I know that we have children abuse, April's Children Abuse Month, and October is Domestic Violence Abuse Month. Yeah. And I would love to have you back on the show just to, you know, just to highlight and to provide the audience with more information and that they can use during that time period.
Well, I would love to be back, and I want to thank you for having the opportunity. And if anything that I said today helps anybody out there, then that makes me all the more better. That's how I heal.
Very good. Excellent. Very good. Thank you, Karen, for all that you do and continue to do for our communities.
Well, thank you.
Okay, dude. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Well, that was absolutely phenomenal. And it was just really a pleasure to have Karen on our show to share her story, and I think the message that she wanted everybody to know is that you know you're never alone, that there's someone that you can always reach out to and talk to, that your story is one that is shared by others, and that you too, like others, will get through this, and don't be afraid to speak out. Speak out if you are the victim. Speak out if you see someone being abused. Okay, before we end the show, we have a couple more friends of the Drive at 5 Live, but I want to go through them. And that's the one is, do you know about the new Jewels in Yonkers? It's Jewels by Elan. They are a must-see destination store in Westchester County. Elton Edwards of Jewels by Elan has hosted many events in the store. Some recent events are poetry jams, charity events, in-store jewelry parties, book signing, just to name a few. All of this is done with a Soho vibe. Ellen features a line she designs as well as some new up-and-coming designers. It's a great place to shop and have a good conversation and perhaps a cup of tea. The Lowe's Key style makes browsing a pleasure. If you haven't stopped by yet, do yourself a favor and take a peek. Store hours are by appointment only, and you can call and make an appointment to have a shopping tour with yourself or with friends. Visit the website at Jewels by Elan, that's JewelsByElan.com, or call 914-512-8578. Lifestyle Dream Vacation. In the unique Dominican Republic, imagine a place with 1,000 miles of pristine beaches overlooking a crystalline turquoise sea, a place where the midday siesta is still a time to honor tradition and the free-spirited merengue is the national dance of choice. Unhurried, uncumbered, and unbelievably liberating from everyday cares and stresses, this is Lifestyle Dream Vacation Resort in the enchanted Dominican Republic, an all-exclusive vacation experience reserved with you in mind. Visit the website at www.lifestyledreamvacation.com. That's lifestyledreamvacation.com. Artists International. Artists International has a wonderful beverage called L'Vive. L'Vive is consists of five super fruits, and those super fruits are goji, mangosteen, acai berry, pomegranate, and I hope I didn't miss one. Mango, green, screen, goji, and noni. And there are 25 reasons why a person should use L'Vive. One is known that for those who have high blood pressure, individuals seem to feel much better. You know, it seems to control their blood pressure. It gives you a lot of energy. It's a powerful antioxidant. It has natural supplements made from, again, the five magnificent fruits. It's organic. It's a great flavor. It's easy to digest, and it's ideal for the entire family. And all you have to do is take 2 ounces one or three times a day, preferably before your meals. And I tell you, it's absolutely a wonderful, wonderful beverage. Okay, that's Livie, L-I-V-E. If you're interested, go to BodyMagic2Go.com to read more about it. That's BodyMagic2Go.com. The Awakening Fair. The Awakening Fair is taking place Saturday, April 16th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Doubletree Tarrytown Hotel. This is their biggest wellness fair and marketplace and it's an opportunity to learn about the cutting edge of wellness of the body, mind, and spirit. When you come, you'll learn about wellness that starts with an attitude of gratitude, living green, being lean, and maintaining a peaceful core in a world that often challenges our serenity. And it's a great place to shop for Mother's Day, Father's Day, communions, graduations, etc. You'll find those unique gifts that shows thoughtfulness and awareness. Again, this is taking place April 16th at 10 a.m. To 6 p.m. at the Doubletree Tarrytown Hotel. This is the Awakening Fair. Wow. Okay, gang. We went over a little bit more of our time, and I apologize. By 4 minutes, we went over. And, again, I thank Karen for being a fantastic guest on the show, and we look forward and have her back sometime in October to talk a little bit more about domestic violence. And for each and every one of my listeners, please share this information with everyone, your friends and your family. And where you do that, you go to blogtalkradio.com/ the Internet, Internet Chronicle, and look for today's date, and you can copy the link, and you can forward the link to your friends. So for those who were unable to listen to the show firsthand today at 5, they can certainly listen to it later on, maybe today or tomorrow at their convenience. Okay, until next week, everyone, I hope that you have a phenomenal, phenomenal week. Take care, everyone.
AVS Media Demo. AVS Media Demo. AVS Media Demo. Media Demo.